Data accuracy is crucial when we talk about climate data, scope 1, 2, and 3. So how are you thinking about this accuracy, and what are you hearing from the people that you're speaking to?
Yeah, it's interesting. So this survey of over 2,000 companies actually kind of identified existing confidence in the accuracy of data as one of the primary indicators of how prepared companies felt for CSRD disclosure and going through assurance of that information.
Hello and welcome to ESG Talk, your go-to source for advice and insights on all things environmental, social, and governance. And Off the Books, where we surf the uncharted waters of accounting, finance, risk, and wherever else the waves take us. That's right, it's another crossover episode. I'm once again your intrepid host, podcast provocateur, and recovering cherry coke addict, Mike Rubagno. In today's episode, we're once again reporting from Climate Week NYC, and Steve and Mandy are joined by Rekiva Industry Principals Alyssa Zucker and Esther Toff to discuss the results of a survey of finance, risk, and sustainability professionals. Some of the interesting tidbits include professionals admit that they're not moving fast enough towards ESG goals, despite being able to link ESG to positive business growth. They also discuss how this group of professionals are thinking about AI, the importance of cross-functional collaboration, and the results of a new CSRD brief, which you can find linked in our show notes. And now, over to Mandy and Steve.
It's such a pleasure to be with this rock star group. It's very rare that you get to get a bunch of practitioners together right in the middle of busy Climate Week and talk about the things that are coming hot off the press or hot off conversations. Speaking of which, Steve, you and I were at Amplify with this crew a couple weeks ago, and we there, as we had thousands of practitioners from finance, risk, and sustainability coming together, did a survey right there going into Climate Week. 300 people took it. And here's what I find fascinating. They reported back that they admit that we're not moving fast enough towards ESG goals. Lissa, as a former CISO, I kind of wanted to ask you as a chief sustainability officer, what is your take on that interesting tension?
I think you talk to a lot of practitioners in this space, a lot of CISOs and their teams, and what you're seeing in the market is that they have these ambitious goals, they've stated them publicly often, they have executive buy-in, and yet they're not progressing at the rate that they thought that they would. And I think the way that you address that, what we hear across the board, is this is about the breakdown of the silo of the sustainability team and truly integrating sustainability into your core business strategy. So working across with your finance and your audit, your enterprise risk management teams, to truly integrate sustainability into how your business thinks about its value add, thinks about its resilience, and really break down that sustainability as its own unique thing. You know, we're in this time where sustainability is so integrated into how the business operates at its core, how it engages its stakeholders, its suppliers, across its broad value chain. And I think we often talk so much about the role of regulation. And when, you know, we have a lot of regulation today, we have multi-jurisdictional regulation specific to climate, broader sustainability when you look at the EU and CSRD. And the role of that is to standardize kind of the process, the information, the expectations that businesses need to follow in order to actually execute and drive that progress. It frankly was a little bit of the Wild West in the past, where every company, every industry kind of had their own way of doing things, you know, and you would have industry groups that come together and they put together best practice. And now we have regulation that is saying, okay, we see the whole landscape, we see the ecosystem, let's create the standardized mechanism and way to raise that bar up so that we can all be doing this the same way. We can be producing decision useful information that collectively can drive that progress and kind of transform those ambitious goals into real progress and real change.
Steve, you and I had some really interesting conversations at Amplify with seasoned executive practitioners in the room around AI. And this morning, I was in a conversation with global chief sustainability officers. And you were talking about integrating it into the business, and they were looking at AI and the future of technology and innovation for their areas. And the Stanford researcher was talking about, in the past, technology, we've had to wait years to see what is actually the benefit. And already with AI, we're starting to see that. And what was unpacked was 8 out of 10 chief sustainability officers that he had interviewed said, please, please take care of like regulatory reporting and compliance. Use AI, use the tech to do it. And I found that really fascinating that that was top of mind as you articulated the regulatory pressures coming in. Steve, why don't you share amongst us and with those listening in about our conversations across risk, financial, and sustainability professionals on AI just a couple weeks ago and their perspective there.
Yeah, for sure. So to set the stage, we had a room of sustainability, financial reporting, and GRC professionals, as you said, and we asked them to rate kind of their thought on, is AI a risk or is an AI a reward? And what was really interesting is that, like by and large, on the whole, it was about a 60-40 split-ish. Not surprisingly, the GRC folks were maybe a little more lean towards risk, sustainability, a little more optimistic and hopeful, a little more towards reward. Financial reporting, I am one of those, kind of like right in the middle. And to me, that's pretty, maybe not unexpected, but I think to me that shows actually more like unanimity as opposed to like, you know, these like wild variances between how people think about it. One other thing, though, that was consistent is that we also did an exercise where we had them rate, like, okay, if you could have low-effort, low-risk AI, let's call it a project, versus a high-effort but high-reward AI project, like, where would you skew? And we actually had them come up with, like, actually specific ideas. And what was so interesting is that across, I don't know, 20 tables of, you know, five or six people in there, far and away, the area that they focused on the most or want to focus on the most was high reward, high effort projects. And so another thing that I thought about taking away as a practitioner is, okay, people are willing to kind of go all in, right? I mean, if it's going to make a big impact, even if it might be months, potentially years, I mean, I don't know. I've been on some pretty big projects, but they are really looking to that technology to make a significant impact. And so to me, I actually see people maybe not racing towards AI, but I actually see people like optimistically pursuing it as opposed to, okay, hey, I want to take a step back. I think people are really seeing that as a way to really move the needle in a pretty big way.
I wanted to pick your brain on this as my text a friend in the industry. It is hard. People don't want to talk about the risk. And I thought that was interesting because as practitioners, we're all weighing it equally the next 2 years. Like what that showed me was 40%. You're still, as you think about reward, you're still 40% of your brain's going, okay, what's the risk here? And so I'm curious, Steve, from your perspective, how do we dig deeper at that conversation of risk?
There's almost this effort to sort of de-risk AI, which is to say, like, okay, how am I going to use it in a way that is still going to drive that efficiency but still handles risk? I know auditors are thinking about that. Regulators are thinking about the proper role of AI. And the way that I think about it is like, okay, let's look at ways that the tool could be used right now to drive real impact. The whole, like, regulatory readiness compliance check, that was a very common example. You know, in financial reporting, there's this, like, disclosure checklist where it's, like, 300 pages of questions like, did you think about this? Did you think about that? No reason in the world why AI couldn't be taking a pass at that. And, yes, you're still going to need a human to do that, but it's not like you're completely handing it over. You're allowing the tool to do something useful and then just making it easier and more value add for where the humans step in. That's how I think about, like, de-risking AI. And I think that seems to be the way that people are kind of approaching this in meaningful ways. Organizations, of course, can have their different ways, and some are further ahead and some are further behind. But I think on the whole, that's the direction that we're going to be going in, because no practitioner wants to completely hand it off, but they do want to get the benefits of what is becoming a really powerful and compelling piece of technology.
I love it. And I know you're fresh off of some other research this week, so you want to share with the group a little bit more about that perspective.
Yeah, for sure. So Workiva just released a CSR brief that's got some really interesting findings in how companies are thinking about mandatory climate and sustainability reporting. You know, we talk a lot about the CSRD, of course, but mandatory reporting is not just limited to the EU. It is global. Companies are perceiving, like, confidence in their data, especially as they get into 2025, thinking about the CSRD. Again, 50,000 companies are going to need to comply with that eventually. And our report found that most aren't quite ready for this monumental shift. Esther, let's bring you in here. One of the areas that we talked about is that companies in the U.S. and APAC are just as worried about data and disclosure as those in Europe. And I think we often think about Europe being like way, way, way far ahead. But as it turns out, and as this briefing told us, maybe that might not be the case. Would love for you to kind of unpack your perspective here, just thinking about this globally.
I think that's absolutely correct. Companies around the globe are going through this process almost simultaneously, learning together and kind of reporting together, and then learning from each other's reporting, which I think is going to be really interesting to watch over the next few years. You know, as you said, We have 27 EU member states plus 3 additional EA member states in Europe who are adopting CSRD. We have an additional 20 countries around the globe in Latin America, Asia Pacific, Africa, and the UK as well, Canada, who are adopting the ISSB standards and IFRS S1 and S2. So this idea of having confidence and being ready for this reporting is really not dependent on geography. Actually, what we have found is that, you know, we asked and compared the results between companies in the EU and companies outside the EU, and we didn't find significant difference. I think we had about 5 or 6 percentage points difference between the companies who felt like the large majority, 77% in the EU said that, you know, complying with CSRD, complying with these regulations will be a lift, you know, will be a challenge. And elsewhere, we had 82% of companies. So really, it is kind of a fantastic year for us. You know, we're working with practitioners, we're supporting with practitioners. I can't wait for the first wave of these reports
right.
to come out next February and March. You know, I might have to take some PTO and, you know, do some reading. That's yes. maybe sounds a little bit sad, but I think we'll somehow make it work. That kind of confidence is really going to be building over time. So I think this kind of global learning process that, you know, our customers and, you know, the companies that we talk to go through together is going to be huge. And one interesting aspect in this research is that, you know, what builds that confidence when you have, like, good reporting processes, as Alyssa mentioned, you know, cross-team collaboration, as you mentioned, Steve, maybe some AI help and support in the mix and on the team. But one key area is, you know, when we found that companies and practitioners have more and more confidence over their data accuracy, then they feel more prepared and more ready. And one area, Alyssa, I want to ask you about this because, you know, data accuracy is crucial when we talk about mm-hmm. climate data, scope 1, 2, and 3. So how are you thinking about this accuracy and what are you hearing from the people that you're speaking to?
Yeah, it's interesting. So this survey of over 2,000 companies actually kind of identified existing confidence in the accuracy of data as one of the primary indicators of how prepared companies felt for CSRD disclosure and going through assurance of that information. So, you know, of those surveyed, 74% of those surveyed that felt confident in the accuracy of their data said, you know, well, it's still going to be somewhat to pretty challenging to actually collect it and then disclose it for CSRD, but that's compared to 90% of companies who do not feel confident in the accuracy of their data. And so, you know, when we speak about that, perfect data is really challenging. We talk about this all the time with emissions. Accuracy of data sometimes means, yes, measured, but it also means accuracy in your estimates.
Yeah.
And so that means really clear documentation of the assumptions you made, your internal controls around collection, manipulations, any industry averages that are utilized. And so building that confidence of, well, okay, here's where we had measured data. It was metered. It's exact. I have an invoice. I have a bill. That's a perfect world. But we don't live in a perfect world. And so when it comes to estimates, you know, that's the kind of confidence and true contextualized understanding that companies are expected to have in disclosing this information. And frankly, that their auditor is going to ask them when they go through assurance is going to be, okay, well, there's not, you know, I don't see this number matching up on this invoice or this piece of evidence. How did you arrive at it? And having the full kind of narrative for, well, this is exactly what we did. This was our process.
Sounds a lot like financial reporting, by the way.
Well, you know, they're both accounting and reporting. And in terms of obtaining assurance on that, you know, again, almost everyone believes obtaining assurance over this information is going to be really hard. But we see that kind of similar 15% differential in the companies that already feel confident in the accuracy of their data. 70% of them believe that it's going to be difficult to obtain assurance versus 83% that do not feel confident in the accuracy of their data. And I would frankly be remiss if I didn't also add the use of technology here in supporting these disclosures. And this is maybe my favorite statistic actually that came out of this report. But going back to anxiety, technology has such a significant influence to ease that around assurance because you have in place the proper documentation to demonstrate exactly what happened. And it's not on disparate systems. It's not spread across handwritten notebooks and file pads, right? You have a controlled system that can be audited for that data that you're disclosing. And so 74% of companies indicated that they had budget available to pursue a technology solution. And again, those 74%, they still think it's going to be difficult to obtain and disclose the information for assurance. But that's compared to 87% of companies that don't have budget for technology to support this effort.
It's so interesting when I think about the role of technology. I liken that almost to like trying to close the books from an accounting standpoint. Like without a system with like a check register, a pile of invoices, you know what I mean, and maybe like some scattered emails. How in the world would you even do that? Like you would never be able to do that. So why would we assume that that would be anything different, right, than if you're going through a relatively similar exercise?
Exactly. And I think that's what we're seeing right now in this new world of assured integrated reporting, where you have this sustainability data that is expected to go through the same assurance process of conventional financial data. And that is something that is not completely, but relatively new to, you know, the scale we're talking about to these companies. The expectation of, you better have your I's dotted and your T's kind of crossed here. And again, it's about the documentation and the transparency. And that's how you de-risk.
A fancy accounting and finance honcho like you shouldn't be wasting time chasing data or copying and pasting numbers. No, use your fancy degree the way your parents always hoped you would. Workiva can help. Whether you're prepping or auditing annual reports or quarterly board presentations, you can use the Workiva platform to automate risky manual processes. Accelerate how you collect, report, and audit financial and non-financial data without sacrificing accuracy, so you can stand behind your story every time. Learn more at workiva.com/accounting.
Or workiva.com/risk.
Or workiva.com/ESG.
Yeah, I love it. Well, as we get ready to wrap up here, I'm thinking about COP that's coming up in maybe the short term or even potentially next year at Climate Week, more long term. I've got three very seasoned and experienced sustainability practitioners here. I feel a little bit like a fish out of water. Would love, as we think about kind of the timing, COP, and then, of course, Climate Week next year, where do you think these conversations are going? Would love to hear all three from all three of you. Alyssa, do you want to start?
Yeah, I'll start. You know, I think that the past couple years have been very focused on standardization and regulation. So we've seen a lot of consolidation across the alphabet soup of voluntary frameworks that we know and love in the sustainability and climate world. SASB and TCFD joining under the IFRS umbrella through the ISSB sustainability and climate standards. And we've seen a lot of that consolidation, and that has actually provided a lot of clarity and standardization in the market. Similarly, we've seen these standards be implemented into law. So that's, you know, all of the jurisdictions that are actually implementing their own little flavor of the ISSB standards, CSRD in Europe, of course, California, SB 261 and 253, climate disclosure rules, the SEC rule. And so we've been very focused on disclosure. Now, I think what we're going to see in the next year, it's the first year for those companies, especially thinking of CSRD, it's the first year of reporting. So we're actually going to have the information, and we're going to be able to evaluate from the corporate disclosure standpoint, you know, how are these disclosures going? What can the markets and investors and broad stakeholders, frankly, take from this information? Where are things consistent? Where are things different? I think this really allows for apples to apples comparison in a way that we haven't even been able to really formulate an opinion about before, because it was just so not consistent. And so I just think from the kind of corporate landscape, what we can expect is much more kind of collaborative and unified conversations from these corporate actors that have all been efforting towards the same thing over the past year, right? They've all had like a similar goal from a disclosure standpoint. And again, thinking about disclosure as a way to also drive ambition and really transform these climate goals and these goals that they have into, okay, well, now we're actually all measuring them in a standardized way. Yeah. We're talking about them in a standardized way. And so using that as a real barometer to say, okay, now I can really do a peer-to-peer, you know, and an industry comparison to understand, what do we actually need to be doing different to actually achieve our goals and hit that progress?
Yeah, I love that. Sounds like we're going to need another podcast discussion.
Always.
Esther, where do you see these conversations heading?
I really like what you said about feeling like a fish out of water. because I think we're going to be talking about a lot more about nature over the next year. So obviously, water is the theme of the upcoming COP in Baku. We're at Climate Week here. I'm looking at a fantastic banner here about water and oceans. I love this. I think there's going to be more and more happening here. And obviously, you know, we talk a lot about regulations, and indeed, that's kind of the biggest wave right now. But let's not forget the next wave that's coming. And, you know, in the background, there's a voluntary wave of TNFD reporters, so for nature-related financial disclosures. And the early adopters, you know, first wave of early adopters on a voluntary basis is happening right now. Second wave is going to be happening after that. The ISSB that Alyssa mentioned is working on their BEES project, biodiversity, ecosystem, and ecosystem services. So yeah, lots of fish, lots of water, hopefully even more of that next year.
I love that. Mandy?
So I'm going to even move a little bit beyond COP to Davos as well, because I believe the new theme that's coming out is like collaborating in a new digital age. And I think what we're going to find, especially when it comes to business impact and societal impact, both being measured well with the same amount of accuracy as you shared, or thinking about CSRD and double materiality, I think it's going to revolutionize the way financial transformation, sustainability transformation, and digital transformation come together in a collaborative sphere. And so I'm excited to see that. I was talking to a CISO, and this is the conversation that stuck out to me. He was talking about making the case for innovation, investment, and R&D for his business, and the risk you have to take with that. But then as he looked at new technology and the digital transformation needed, he's like, any new place we go, I look for three things. What is the emission reduction? What is the financial benefit? So think, if I reduce my emissions, I might not pay carbon tax in a certain country, or I might have more cost efficiency in my energy usage. Mm-hmm. So what are the actual business benefits of that decision and that technology investment and R&D investment? And I think that is the exciting next wave, is when the financial data and the societal data come together, true global transformation is going to happen.
And what really excites me about that, to hear you share that and articulate it in that way, is just the need for these teams. And we talk about cross-collaboration, I mean, again and again, we talk about it for years. To me, that's actually really where that's going to happen, right? I need my finance and my FP&A team to be in lockstep with the sustainability team. We need auditors that are helping us, you know, be sure that information is confident and useful. Anyway, it's going to be really, really exciting to see how that plays out.
So everyone stay tuned. We're going to have more exciting conversations with these wonderful, wonderful women next to us, as well as upcoming at COP.
Thank you again to Alyssa Zucker and Esther Talk. Thank you to the Serving Long Lines. I'm Mike Gravano, and that was Mandy McReynolds and Steve Sutton. This has been Off the Books and ESG Talk, presented by Workiva. Please subscribe, leave a review wherever you are, and tell your buddies if you like the show. If you're watching this on YouTube, leave us a note in the comments, or feel free to drop us a line at offthebooks@workiva.com. Surf's up, and we'll see you on the next Workiva.